Good morning. We got a lot of people here. You never know who's going to show up on this Sunday after Christmas. So thank you for being here on this blustery day. We are in the final Sunday of 2024. Crazy, right? And it's a good time for self-reflection, reflecting on the year that has been and looking forward to the year that will be. And I'm going to be a little bit self-indulgent here and share some of what has bubbled up for me. I've been thinking a lot about my life and my career, and of course I'm incredibly grateful for the health and well-being of my two children, quasi-adult children, and my husband. But I want to focus today on my work with all of you. I love my job. Truly, it is the greatest job in the world. I have been ordained for 15 years now, and that seems like a long time. My path to ordination wasn't a straight one. I actually graduated from seminary 30 years ago, if you can believe it. That's a really long time. But I took 15 years to get from there to here. Life got in the way. I met my husband and married. I had two children. I had a great career in marketing. It wasn't until I moved here and started working part-time at St. John's that I realized that I was finally ready. And I'm so glad I took that step. I didn't become a priest so I could stand up here on a Sunday morning and tell y'all what I think about God and Scripture. It's hard for me because I'm very self-critical. Nothing is ever quite good enough. But really, I became a priest because of all of you. Whether we connect over great, interesting conversations around theology, which we do, or during times of great heartbreak or great joy, which we do, it is such an honor to be invited into your lives in these meaningful ways. So my heart is filled with gratitude, and I finally had the courage to take the step to ordination, and it did take courage. But seriously, 15 years, that means that I have now cycled through the lectionary 5 times. Years A, B, and C, 5 times. I don't preach every Sunday, so I don't necessarily preach on the same readings over and over and over again, but many times I do. The challenge is to keep things fresh and new. The message doesn't change, really. How we present it might be different. And when I'm preparing to write a sermon, I begin maybe the week before, the Monday before, by reading the texts that are assigned for the coming Sunday. Something usually grabs me, grabs my interest, my attention in that first reading, an idea, a question, a word, or a phrase, whatever it is. I let it germinate in my mind for several days, beginning to build a sermon in my head. And sometimes those initial ideas blossom, and sometimes they fizzle out, and I kind of have to start over again, right? Or something else comes and fills that space. What amazes me most of the time is how alive the story remains. The Bible is an amazing and rich anthology in that way. Each reading of a passage sparks something new, asks a different question, inspires a different reaction, unless it doesn't. While I had been curious about God and religion since my childhood, I don't think I ever actually opened a Bible until I was in college. I was an English literature major, and I took a course called The Bible as Literature. I would say that approaching the Bible from a literary critique perspective is somewhat at odds with reading it as an expression of faith, but nonetheless, I fell in love with the Bible during that course. It piqued my curiosity and laid the groundwork for my eventual decision to go to seminary. I became an English major because I love to write and I love books. I love story. And so it has always made sense to me that I was drawn so deeply into our Christian story, although my friends and family still don't quite understand it. It's an extraordinary story, really. And like all great stories, how we read and interpret it at any given moment has as much to do with where we are as it does to do with the story itself. Good stories are living things. While my process for approaching Scripture is intended to get me out of my head and into my heart, to listen to what the Scripture is saying to me right now, it doesn't always work. 4 years as an English major at Berkeley and 3 years at Harvard Divinity School ingrained a certain academic approach to how we are to read, understand, parse, criticize, and intellectualize story. It's a hard habit to break, and sometimes it gets in the way. And from time to time, I get stuck, and that critical eye comes out. And the problem with that critical eye is that it has a boomerang effect, and it bounces back at myself. And I can be really hard on myself. The script in my head saying, I'm not a scholar. What am I saying that's new and fresh? What can I possibly say that hasn't already been said before? It's not a pleasant place to find myself. So recently there have been a few things that have helped me to refresh my perspective on Scripture and on myself. The first is the women's worship that we do once a month. I see several women here that join me for that service. During the past 2 years, I focused most of the talks on unpacking. I call them talks, not sermons, because I talk and then we talk amongst ourselves. Great conversation. Many of the talks given during the past 2 years have focused on unpacking some of the better-known women of the Bible, right? Distinguishing, I had trouble with that at 8 too, distinguishing what is said in the text from itself, from how it's being interpreted for to us and for us for thousands of years. Eve, Mother Mary, Mary Magdalene, and lesser known women, Deborah and Jael, Rahab and Tamar, Ruth and Naomi. The process I go through for these talks is pretty academic. It requires a lot of research. Understanding the commonly held interpretations, where they came from and why. It also requires a very deep reading of the text itself. What does the text actually say versus what is based on millennia of interpretation? And I really nerd out on this. I have a lot of fun. What's been so interesting for me is how deeply I've come to know and to love these women. And it's helped to open my mind and heart to connect to the story in new ways. I've gotten really excited about the story, and being able to share that with other women has been truly life-giving. And it's changed my relationship with Scripture. I read it differently, with more curiosity, a deeper sense of connectedness. I have come to know the Bible more intimately. The other thing I've done is really the polar opposite of this, I would say, right? I began to read poetry. How many of you read poetry? How many of you are poets? There's a few. You can, even if you write a casual poem, you're a poet, right? I've never been a big poetry person. I sat through the requisite courses in college on poetry, but it just never really grabbed a hold of me. But each month for the women's worship service, I select a poem to be used in place of the psalm. It has to keep in theme with the service, and I want it to be written by a woman. So I read a lot of poems to find the right ones. And it's been a really great experience for me in really digging into that part of writing that I've never responded particularly to. And I've also been inspired to the poets in our midst, not just Brian and Travis, but the many poets who have visited us during Poetry Festival a few years ago, as chaplains at the chapel, and so on. I discovered that listening to a poet read their poetry aloud is completely different, different experience. Now, an example, most of us read along in our bulletins when the lector is reading the passages, right? But try putting the bulletin aside and just listening. It's a very different experience. It allows me to absorb the power and the beauty of the words. It is transformative in a different way, and it's begun to awaken something new in me. I don't aspire to be a poet, but I appreciate poetry in a new way. This year, I decided to explore this a little bit more intentionally. Again, not as an aspiring poet, but with the hope that it might help me approach my own reading and writing in new ways, more creatively, or at least differently. To not just read for content, but to appreciate the beauty and the power, the motion of the words themselves. I've read more poetry, a lot more. And this summer, I attended a week-long retreat led by a poet at Ring Lake Ranch. Almost everyone there was a poet, except me, and that was definitely outside of my comfort zone, I will tell you. One of the things that the guest poet, a man named Chris Latre, who's the poet laureate of Montana, one of the things that he stressed was not to write for perfection or even for an end product, but simply to write. Write observations, what you see and hear and feel. Don't worry if it's any good, just write. And as a person who's written almost entirely for an audience, in school, as a marketing professional, as a priest, this was incredibly liberating. And I did write during that week. I even wrote some poetry. I don't know if it was any good at all, but I loved it. I've begun to write more for me, not for an audience, which has allowed me to immerse myself in the experience, into the beauty of the word, without stressing so much about meaning or form or message. I still have to produce a coherent message for y'all on Sunday morning. But the practice of writing only for me has reignited my love of the word, and it has helped me to see scripture and, frankly, the world in new ways. Something interesting happened for me during this Advent season. During Advent, we read Isaiah, and I've always loved Isaiah. But for the first time, shockingly, for the first time, I heard the words of Isaiah as poetry, beautiful poetry. I didn't discover this. I didn't make it up. Isaiah is poetry. But I'd never read or heard it in that way. It changed my reaction and how it left me feeling. And when I read the four passages for today, the whole thing felt like one grand poem. I very rarely connect all four scriptures in that way, or passages in that way. Isaiah, Psalm 147, Galatians, John, all speak of God's lavish love. Isaiah prophesies a time of joy and renewal where people will be adorned with beauty and their land will flourish, foreshadowing the coming of the one who will usher in a new era of peace and prosperity. The imagery is beautiful. I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My whole being shall exult in my God. For God has clothed me with the garments of salvation. God has covered me with a robe of righteousness. As a bridegroom decks himself with a garland, and as a bride adorns herself with her jewels. And Psalm 147 speaks of God's loving care and commitment to the well-being of creation. God has blessed your children within you. God has established peace on your borders. God satisfies you with the finest wheat. Even Galatians, in its own way, it tells us that the law was temporary. And then it says that it is there to guide us until God sends the Spirit of the Son into our hearts. Isn't that beautiful? It reminds me of one of my favorite passages from Jeremiah, in which God says, I will put my law within them. I will write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. I love that. That passage always moves me. I literally feel God's presence in my heart when I hear those words. And then it culminates with John, which has always been my favorite gospel. John is spiritual and mystical and deeply symbolic and poetic. Sometimes hard to understand, but so beautiful. And in this single passage from John, John ties all of the readings together in an interesting way, in that his narrative moves from Genesis all the way through to the birth of Jesus and his ministry. It is beautiful. So what are we to take away with us from this arrangement of words, of verse, coupled together in a single poem? I referred earlier to the Bible as an anthology, a collection of writings by a variety of authors, and technically it is. And each story stands on its own merits, and yet taken together, they tell an extraordinary story of our separation from God and God's dogged and unrelenting work towards reconciliation, a testament to God's deep and unending love for us and all creation. That's the story. And I'm reminded to feel the joy and love and beauty and power of the words of this story. I want to let the words kind of wash over me and seep into me and begin to speak to me before I ever try to understand them. To take joy in the word and not take myself too seriously along the way. Read in this way, the story is always fresh and new, hitting my heart differently every time. And I know there's a life lesson in this for me. It is more than how I might approach scripture. It's about how I might approach life. And I wonder how each of you might benefit by looking at something in your life from a new perspective and challenging yourself to see the poetry around you in the year to come. Happy New Year.